Yo, what's the heavy hitter, DJ Wala, and you're now plugged into the Subject Thread Podcast with your host, Nyla Lavelle.
Like, there are certain people that have these ability to be independent contractors, self-employed, day traders, real estate investors, singers, artists, those type of people. Avenues within the real estate umbrella, because there's so many different ways to make money in real estate. I think a lot of people miss that.
Right, right. And that's very true, because when you say real estate, that's the umbrella, right? That's what, and then there's so many other strategies. So real quick, what I'll do for our listeners is explain a little bit about what wholesaling real estate is.
I like that question, because I was just talking about this yesterday, and I feel like with Kanye, he's like, he does things that we all do behind closed doors.
Yeah, I've never been asked that.
This is Subject Thread Podcast. We different here.
You are now tuned in to Subject Thread Podcast, giving you real dose of storyboard conversations, art, money, culture, and more.
Hey guys, what is up? What is up? This is your girl in the building, Nyla Lavelle, for another episode of Subject Thread Podcast. And I have a very, very special guest with us from Harlem, New York City. I have the founder of Harlem Candle Company in the building with us, Miss Terry Johnson. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am absolutely awesome. It's really chilly right now, but you know, we're here.
We're here. Well, thank you so much for having me on and giving me this platform to tell my story. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They said it was going to be like a huge snowstorm. That's kind of the reports I got last night. And then all of a sudden I looked and I was like, where's the huge snowstorm? Did you get those same reports?
I got those same reports, and I'm looking outside and there's nothing.
Yes. We're kind of like beating the winter this year, which I'm not complaining about. Let me be clear. But it hasn't been too bad.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think we have to be grateful that it hasn't been too bad, considering that we're in a pandemic, but it's definitely a little strange.
Absolutely. Now, for the people that don't know, are you born and bred from Harlem?
No, I'm originally from Houston, Texas.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Okay. I moved to Harlem after I graduated. I went to school at Florida A&M. And once I graduated, I moved to New York, and Harlem is the first place I moved. So, and it was a while back, and I fell in love with Harlem from the moment I moved here. Just felt this such a strong sense of community. And I grew up in the suburbs, so I don't know what it's like to live in a really urban environment. So I just felt so embraced and so much love, where people are just telling me to have a good day, or that I look good today, or just compliments and smiles and acknowledgement when you're just simply walking down the street or going to the local coffee shop. It just felt so good. So I am a Harlem transplant, but it's home. It is home. And I love this place so much.
Awesome. Awesome. So is it safe to say that you were here when you started to see like the transition of Harlem?
Oh yeah. Oh no. I mean, I was part of it.
Okay.
I was part of it. Yeah. I was, you know, part of those new people coming into Harlem. You couldn't tell because of the color of my skin, but I was part of it.
Okay.
And high prices for rent. Yeah. But you know, one thing I can say is so many young Black professionals, you know, were moving to Harlem and establishing our roots in Harlem. Yeah, when I moved to New York, I wanted to live in the city. I didn't really want to live in, although Brooklyn is amazing, I didn't really want to live in Brooklyn. I wanted to live in New York City. So, and at the time, Harlem was the more affordable place in New York City to live, that still, you know, where it still felt like a neighborhood. I didn't want to be in a, you know, big, tall building and, you know, with no sort of sense of community. And Harlem has that. So, yeah, I have become a Harlem ambassador.
Harlem Knight.
I have. It's just, you know, I've traveled to a lot of different places around the world, but Harlem is one of those places that just, there's nothing like coming home to Harlem and, you know, hearing the lively, highly spirited characters walking down the street, saying whatever they're saying. It's just love, and it's just home, and it's just good.
So how was that transition like coming from the South? Because like Houston, I want to say in the 90s, that was still like the South, not too much migration yet. How was that like coming to a whole new city, a whole new life?
Well, I left Houston when I was 18 years old to go to school in Florida. Okay. So I was still relatively young. So I didn't know what like living in Houston as an adult really was. So I can't say I can really compare the two. Plus, I was also in the suburbs. But just coming from Tallahassee, from, you know, going to school at Florida A&M, was a big difference. But I had done an internship in New York prior to coming here. So I already knew what to expect. And just so you know, I when I first moved here, I was doing management consulting. And that was fine. And then I did marketing. But while I was doing marketing, I realized how important storytelling was in what I was in, you know, the job that I was doing. So I decided to take some film classes at the New York Film Academy and the School of Visual Arts. So then I started learning how to really tell stories and do it through video and video editing. And then I started doing Travelista, and I created Travelista TV with a friend of mine, where we decided that we were going to be, you know, the faces of Black people traveling around the world. And we ended up, you know, traveling to a lot of different really cool places. And then she ended up falling in love and moving to Italy. So then it became Travelista Terry. And I've done a lot of really incredible projects with the Travel Channel and different brands and different tourism boards. So I've done a couple of things with South African tourism and Japan tourism. I'm just so many different. I've been to a lot of different places. And because I feel like a lot of people don't know, it's like, oh, you just love candles and you started a candle company. It's like, no, I've done a whole lot of other.
I actually don't see that with you. Actually, what was so incredible about you and why I said, like, were you from Harlem for people that don't know, is that you look like you're so nostalgic and it's like luxury Harlem. You have that old Renaissance feel. And I noticed that about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the 1940s. That and please don't take that in the wrong way. I just think that Harlem was so iconic and so beautiful from like the 20s to the 40s. And I feel like you were like a part of that. Do you ever get that? Have you ever somebody ever told you that before?
Someone gave me the most wonderful compliment last night. I do a live stream every other Tuesday called Tuesdays with Terry. And someone said I was giving them Dorothy Dandridge vibes. And I was like, what? I will take it. She's so beautiful and so elegant. But just so you know, in my living room where I live stream, I have Billie Holiday on the wall, Josephine Baker, Dorothy Dandridge, Carmen Lavallade. I have all these really Eartha Kitt, beautiful, iconic figures. And so I think, you know, I am really in love with the Harlem Renaissance. I felt even more. I've always was interested in it when I was younger, but it wasn't until I moved to Harlem and saw, you know, the names of streets after these figures and the names of different institutions and different places named after these people that I said, oh, you know what? Let me brush up on my Harlem Renaissance history. And then you realize it is all around you. There's so many symbols and signs. And, you know, when I look back at images from that era and I read the stories, it's just like incredible the stuff that they were able to accomplish, you know, with still living in places that were or dealing with segregation and discrimination in ways that we think it's bad now. I mean, you can only imagine what they had to go through. And that's why so many people migrated from the South and from all these other places to Harlem, because this became the Mecca. This became the epicenter of Black culture. You had all these writers and performers and singers and poets and creatives that came here. And I think I really want to carry on their legacy, and I want to carry it on through entrepreneurship, through celebrating their life and what they, things that they loved through beautiful fragrances. So that's really what inspired me to start the Harlem Candle Company. Plus, I also just really love beautiful, beautiful fragrances, and why not? Why not? Why
absolutely. Not? And you exude that. You definitely exude that. And you just spoke something that was just really real about entrepreneurs and how you can have multiple different things going on at one time. And you just spoke about your film and, you know, your career with that. What was an iconic movie that you saw that you said, you know what, I want to dabble into that industry? Was there something that like triggered you to say, I want to do that?
You know, there's not one film in particular. When I first started out in the film world, I loved documentary film. I was obsessed with documentary film because a lot of the stories were untold stories, stories that were not necessarily, you know, so much, you know, about entertaining, but it was about information. And I've always been a student. I love learning. I love learning about different places, different cultures, different people, different experiences, because I feel that those are the sorts of things that I can pull from to enrich my life as much as possible. So it was really documentary film, and I consumed, you know, as much as I possibly could, just kind of understanding how you take all of this information, all of these pictures, all of these different people's perspectives, and tell a story that is compelling and interesting, and that can, in some cases, inspire change or inspire us to think differently about a certain group of people. So it's really just documentary film. I still love documentary film. I feel like I probably end up back doing more of that later in my life when I'm not so busy developing new products with my current company, but I really just love storytelling.
But you can definitely tell that, because even with the candle company, every candle has like a story to it, a certain name. Was that something that just came about, or it just naturally flowed?
It naturally flowed. Yeah, it really did. I have a candle called Langston, and I used, you know, what I thought Langston Hughes's creative space felt like and smelled like. And what's really cool is I had the opportunity to go to the home where he lived prior to developing this candle. So, and just doing all the research, you know, Langston Hughes he loved to do a lot of his work really late at night. And so I wanted a scent that was very reminiscent of After Dark. And I also imagine him going to a speakeasy and just kind of, you know, spending time with his contemporaries and, you know, so a little bourbon. So there's some bourbon vanilla and there's some incense. He loved incense. He used to live in Mexico, actually, a couple times in his life. And he would go into these really small, candlelit, dusky churches, and he loved the incense that was burning in these churches. So I do a lot of research, and because I want to honor them, I want, if they were alive today, that they would like the candle inspired by them. So that, and I, same thing with Josephine Baker. I wanted it to be sexy. I wanted it to be reminiscent of her boudoir, because, you know, she was in Paris and she had boudoir. Mm-hmm. And I put beautiful Moroccan rose notes in that candle. Why? Because Josephine, at that time, she was one of the most famous superstars in the world, originally from St. Louis, then New York, and then New York, she just could not take it anymore because there was so much discrimination. She was performing in front of all these audiences, and not one member of the audience looked like her. Wasn't allowed to enter through the kitchen to perform at places, or she couldn't just enter and take the same elevators. And she's the performer. They're there to see her. So Josephine Baker was like, forget this. I'm going to Paris. And she became a sensation. And she had so many suitors and so many fans. And they say she got like 100 different marriage proposals over the years. So I put Moroccan rose notes in her candle. Why? Because they were just giving her roses all the time. And I wanted it to be something just so rich and so luscious. So there's beautiful rose notes. There's some tonka bean. There's some jasmine. And some beautiful oriental notes, because at the time, back in the 1920s, those were really popular, sort of powdery, delicate, feminine. That's how a lot of women scented themselves. Those are the perfumes that were so popular then. So I just do this research. It's very conceptual. It's, you know, it's fun. And then I work with really, really incredible perfumers who are able to translate my vision, my ideas into beautiful fragrances. So I can't say I am not the one mixing. I'm not a chemist. I just have the idea. So
you just mentioned one of my favorite poets, Langston Hughes. And then you also just mentioned Josephine Baker. And I was actually watching an interview with Lynn Winfield not too long ago. And she really embodied that character. You said something that was just truly amazing. James Baldwin is also one of those Harlem guys. Mm-hmm. And he said the same thing in regards to having to leave the states to get recognized. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people understand that that was going on back then. Like, you were the person that they came to see, but you had to go in through the kitchen. And you just put a nail on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, we have a candle inspired by James Baldwin's garden. So he left and he lived his last 17 years in a town called Saint-Paul-de-Vence in France. And he had a beautiful garden. And he also lived in one of the most fragrant regions in France, in the Provence region. And he had roses growing wild, Rose du Mai, in his garden. And so and he also really liked roses. People would gift him roses all the time. So we put some beautiful rose notes, some sandalwood, and we have on the candle inspired by James Baldwin, we have a quote in 22 karat gold from one of the books he wrote while spending all this time in his garden. So yeah, gosh,
I love the fact that you put so much work into this. Like the way that you're translating into your candles, like I said, is like a story. You're actually writing the treatments for candles.
Oh my gosh. You're right. I never thought of it like that.
It is absolutely amazing. Now, speak to me about your travel channel a little bit as well, which I think is absolutely amazing because it has been for so many years a misconception that, you know, Black people of color don't really travel. And that's so incorrect.
Yeah. Well, so I started traveling when I was 12. I think that was the first time I had gone out of the country. And then in high school, I lived in Spain as an exchange student. And then in college, I studied in Paris and Italy. So travel has always been a really, really big deal. And after I graduated, even though I was working for Accenture, this management consulting firm, I started working on this idea for a travel show. And we ended up doing all sorts of cool stuff. BET, TV One, Sundance Channel. We were creating content for all of these different media outlets. And mostly online, the travel channel where, yeah, we were sometimes incorporating a car or a hotel chain or something was sponsored by. We knew that we traveled because we would see other people like us here and there, but most people just didn't really believe it. And we realized that the only way for people to believe it is if let's just start documenting. And so we did that. And I still have content. I haven't uploaded any new content to my YouTube. I mean, right now I just put all my content on YouTube. I haven't done that in quite a while, but I've done a whole bunch of top 10 things to do in a destination. That's kind of what I'm known for. Terry's top 10 things to do. A really funny story. My cousin called me a couple days ago at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And whenever, you know, a cousin calls it, you don't talk to that often. You're like, wait, let me pick up the phone. He's like, cousin, I'm sitting here trying to plan a trip to Savannah, Georgia. And I go on YouTube because we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And your video is the first thing that pops up. I'm like, yeah. I was like, yep, Savannah Tourism paid me to come and just create some cool stuff. And yeah. And so it's that career was fun. I'm glad I did it. But I have to say part of the reason why I was just sort of, I'd just been doing it for a while and I wasn't really making enough money for it to be a sustainable career. And I was just at the point in my life, my needs had changed. You know, I wasn't in my 20s anymore, where it's just like, oh yeah, I can, you know, make like very little money and just be fine. I was like, I need to, no, it's time. So I was just ready to kind of build a business that didn't require someone always saying yes or green lighting a project. I knew I could create a product and products that I would love. Because Harlem Candle Company, just so we're clear, before I even created it, I would love to walk into a store and buy a luxury candle inspired by the Harlem Renaissance. That's what I want. So I basically created what me and all my friends want.
Hey guys, what's up? This is your girl in the building, Nyla Lavelle. I'm sorry to have interrupted the podcast, but I want you guys to make sure that you're following us on Instagram and Twitter at Subject Thread. Instagram and Twitter. It helps with the algorithms. Thank you for the support for the 100,000 plus streams, and it's ongoing on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audible, Podchaser, Amazon Music, and more. Please continue on supporting us independently owned, minority woman owned. I appreciate the support. Make sure to visit us online at subjectthreadpodcast.com.
Mm-hmm. I am the customer. They are the customers. And I knew that there was a market for it because it didn't exist. There were no high-end luxury, Black-owned and inspired by Black excellence and culture. That didn't exist. So
no, it didn't. It definitely didn't. Definitely didn't. That's why we wanted to bring you on. And I love the component that it's hand-poured, but you're also using vegan-friendly materials to make your candles. Is that something that was just thought about, or you just was like, this is something that has to be?
Well, you know, when I started making candles, I'd only kind of know when I first started, which the first time I made a candle was in 2014, but that's all I knew, soy wax. So that's how it started, I think. And that was the trend is, yeah, you want eco-friendly, clean. So, and I think that's just what most people are doing, unless you're buying maybe, you know, those sort of taper candles for maybe tea lights or and things like that. But for the most part, I think most people are using soy or some sort of vegan, you know, coconut wax.
That's amazing. I didn't even know vegan coconut wax existed. You just gave me a peep me to something. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
And I love coconut.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not that it smells like coconut, but a lot of things are, I think ours is it's a soy coconut vegetable blend. So.
Oh, wow. Isn't that amazing that you can use certain things for food, but you can also use certain things for luxury as well, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
So when you're cultivating a treatment for your candle, right? Because that's what we're going to call it. Cultivating yes. This is not just like a regular candle situation. Every candle has a story. Mm-hmm. Do you have a certain musical playlist that's going in your head?
Well, when I first started making candles and when I was hand pouring all of them in my kitchen, I would play jazz. I would put on a Pandora station that was, I think I have like a Duke Ellington playlist. And so it'll play Duke Ellington and everything like Duke Ellington. And that was always really fun to just, because I would imagine, this is what it was like in Harlem back then. And music can transport you. Fragrance can transport you. And I think just kind of combining those two things when I first started making them really helped me want to create the kind of the best products that I possibly could. And it also gave me different ideas subconsciously, like things that I can't even point out to you that it does. But I get ideas even for packaging and design, listening to music. So
is it safe to say you're a jazz head?
Yeah, I revealed to my Instagram on Instagram Live. I guess people didn't know this. I guess because I never talked about it, but I used to play the saxophone. Now, I played the saxophone in middle school. So if someone gave me a saxophone right now and I tried to create my embouchure and to play a few notes, I don't know if I could. But it would be really kind of cool to try because I was pretty good. I was either first or second chair all the time. So, but yeah, I do love jazz. I love music though. I love all music, but...
Okay. Now, speaking of jazz, you mentioned Duke Ellington. Is there like a certain song from him that you really, really love and adore?
I don't know if there's one. The album, The A-Train, I think it's called. Or maybe that is a particular song. But no, I don't have, there's no one song. Duke Ellington has so much music. He has so much music. There's not that one song, though, that sticks out to me. No.
I think I love Duke Ellington, and I think what I like about him is he did a duet album before that they were so popular. Now people do duet albums a lot, but he did one with John Coltrane. Mm. They did a album together, and the song that I love by them together was In a Sentimental Mood. And that also Love Jones soundtrack as well.
In a Sentimental Mood. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to re-listen to that when we finish.
Yeah, that whole album is actually really, really great. And it was featured in, like I said, Love Jones, the movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah. Do you know when I guess it was maybe 1 year into starting the Harlem Candle Company, I was flying down to Tallahassee where my mom and my grandparents are from. My grandparents passed away a long time ago. I found a picture. My grandfather and his parents and my great grandparents were being honored after posthumously. They were being honored for the work that they had done in civil rights. And so I just started doing a lot of research on my grandfather, and I was on the Florida State Archives website. I found a picture of my grandfather and Duke Ellington that no one in the family knew existed.
Oh, wow. That is iconic.
I know. But, you know, he was a professor. He was, you know, really instrumental in civil rights. So I think back during that time, if you were an artist, a musician, a professor in education, if you were college educated, you somehow could be connected. And especially in Tallahassee. So I guess Duke Ellington, he was in Tallahassee at the time. Yeah, I guess with my grandfather met him and there they at some event. So, but also the jazz, Cannonball Adderley, they were my grandparents' friends, the Adderley family. They live right down the street. So they're my parents' friends. So I think at that time, you know, your friends, you just, especially if you're doing something interesting, if you're doing like making a difference and doing something inspirational and to help others, you probably were mm-hmm. somehow connected.
That right there is a documentary. Tallahassee. You don't really hear too much of that historical stuff. What did you do with the picture? Did you make a copy of it?
Oh, of course. I have it hanging. I have a gallery wall in my bathroom that has all of my favorite Harlem Renaissance figures. And then right there is a picture of my grandfather in Duke Ellington and Duke Ellington's wife.
I love it. That's really amazing. It's like a full circle moment.
It was a full circle moment for me. It was just like, oh, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing right now. This is confirmation.
No, absolutely. And speaking of travel, you've traveled so many different places. What are some of your best places and kind of like why?
I really love Cuba. Now, I went to Cuba before it was legal. I mean, it was a while ago, but I knew other people who had gone. And so you have to go either at that time you went through Mexico or you went through Jamaica and or Canada. So I really love Cuba. I love Cuban music. I love salsa. I used to dance semi-professionally salsa here for a very short time, but I realized I was like, oh, wait, do I want to become a professional salsa dancer? No. So let me focus on something else. And then that's when I started doing film classes. It's like this dancing is taking up too much of my time. But I really love Huahuanco. Like I love that old Celia Cruz, the countryside, you know, the mix of the Spanish guitar and the African drums, like that combination of music is just so good. So I went there because I wanted to just learn a lot more about, because here I was dancing salsa and learning so much about the different types of movements and how so much of the dance form was from Africa, but then the Afro-Cuban. And so, yeah, so I had gone to Cuba and fell in love with it and just learned so much about the people, about the culture. But then I also got, this was back in 2003, then I also got to share so much about me being an African-American woman. I got to, I speak Spanish. And so it was so important for them to learn about us and about our experiences, because they didn't necessarily have, at that time, they didn't have access to learn and to all the internet. You know, we can see everything now. They didn't have that opportunity. So they were only given information that they only knew information that they were given. And here I am explaining and telling and sharing. And it was just, yeah, so Cuba. But I don't know what Cuba would be like now after, you know, there's been such an influx of tourists going. I don't know. It would be interesting to go back, but I had a really beautiful and authentic experience with the Cubans. I also really love Salvador Bahia in Brazil. I love Salvador. But just, I think it's because it's just so culturally, it's such African culture and so many customs and things that come from Africa that are in Salvador. And so you're just seeing another place like America, where there were the transatlantic slave trade, where, okay, this is how we ended up, and this is what we're up to. In Salvador, you go to Salvador, you see, okay, so maybe coming from different countries. Okay, so this is how they, you know, have survived and ended up. And it's just really great to see the juxtaposition of our lives versus their lives and opportunities that we have versus the opportunities that they don't have. And you realize there's a whole lot of, you know, disparity and differences in terms of education and opportunity. And it just blew my mind. Also made me very, very grateful. And that's why I think it's just so important to travel and to see other places and to see other things. And because we have American passports, we have the ability to be able to pick up and go. Unlike if you're a Brazilian and you maybe don't come from a certain means or the color of your skin is too dark, you're not going to get a visa to come to America or get the visa to go to Europe and get the visas to go and enrich your life by learning what else is out there. And I think that was part of our real strong
message out there. No, it's amazing that you put that out there. You pretty much just show that there's colorism everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, yeah. It exists. It definitely exists. But it's up to us, you know, to do what we can do to celebrate us, you know, in all shades. And that's one thing I really like about what's happened last year and what's still happening is just, you know, people are speaking out and people are recognizing and paying attention to the difference. You know, people have asked me, oh, have you ever, you know, faced discrimination or been to, you know, in any of the countries that you've been to? And, you know, I honestly haven't, or if I have, I don't even pay attention to it because I don't want to never wanted something like that to take away, because it's usually, it could be one person or I don't want something like that to take away a beautiful experience. But also I'm not threatening. I'm 5'5" on a good day, but I'm not, you know, I'm relatively petite, although COVID has changed that. But the pandemic is just like, uh-oh, wait, what does that scale say?
Because I'm not a little guilty of a little COVID weight.
Yeah, but because it's just, you know, I have a friendly look to me, you know, and that's what people, oh, I had Airbnb guests once and they were from China and it was a mother and daughter. And they were so nice. The daughter was applying to get into music school. She was a very talented piano player. And they didn't speak English very well. And they told me, we pick your house because you're pretty. I'm like, what? Your face, you're pretty. And I said, wow, they chose me, my apartment to stay here because I had, and in my picture on Airbnb, I just have a big smile. My hair is pulled back. I got a smile like, hi. But because you smile, you're pretty. I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
But I guess, you know, in life, I smile so much more than I ever frown or make, you know, the opposite face. So I think that's also important just in travel and in meeting people. It's just, you know, your disposition. And mine is always, because I'm always excited about travel. I'm like, ooh, what's this? What's that? Oh my gosh. So, and I'm just ready and I'm excited and I'm happy. So I think that helps.
Well, that's something that's extremely important, especially when you're having the entrepreneur hat on. You have to have a good attitude because you just go through so many different challenges at times.
Oh, like every day? No.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the schedule changes from one time frame to another. No, I tell people all the time, being an entrepreneur is not for the faint. Like if you don't have tough skin, if you can't get through certain things, critical thinking, and you're very emotional, a lot of time you probably won't make it.
No. No, you're so right. It's not for everyone. And people ask me all the time, oh, what should you give some lessons or some advice? I say, look, you have to be okay with failing. You have to be okay with failing multiple times. You have to be okay with getting it wrong. You have to be okay with accepting, you know, your role in it. You know, you can't be someone who just blames everyone else for your lack of success. You got to own it. You know, I did it wrong this time, but you know, this is how I'm going to make a change. You have to be okay with it. And which really you have to be really okay with and you have to be in touch with yourself, especially if you want to, because there's probably ways that you can, there's plenty of people who probably are, oh, well, I'm just going to blame this and blame that and try to do this. But are they happy? Because one thing that's very important to me is everyone that I work with, all the suppliers, vendors, stores, and the people that work for me, I want everyone to be happy and satisfied with everything that we're doing, not just because, oh, I can get a cheaper price here. I'm going to negotiate and make it really tough for them. Or I'm not doing that because let's just have everything be amicable. Let's have everything be nice. Let's be about our business. But there's just no reason to have contention in things. And I like harmony, and harmony is important for me in business. I would never be and one of those entrepreneurs who's going to be shrewd about the way that I deal with. I just can't, no, because I like to be happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Facts. It's you already have to deal with a lot in the world. I tell people this, especially sometimes being a woman entrepreneur, a woman of color. So you have to be happy. You said something that's really, really important.
Yeah.
Now, if it wasn't Harlem, where would you want to be?
Oh, I don't know. Harlem is home. I'm going to tell you right now, if I feel like I live in the best place in America right now, Harlem, I do. I really do. I'm from Texas. I wouldn't want to live in Texas right now. Mm-mm. Not with everything that's going on. Not with, you know, the president number 45. No, I would have never. No. And even though he's no longer president, there's so much toxicity that he left, you know, and so many lies that he's fed and all these people he's emboldened to, you know, be terrible humans. I'm fine. I like Harlem. This is home. So okay. I don't know. I have another answer. I mean, I would like to be on some beautiful Caribbean island right now and, you know, just to have a nice vacation. But as far as living, I love Harlem.
You love Harlem. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at it. Okay. I love Harlem too. So I'm not mad at it. Now, what's next for Harlem Candle Company? What are some of your goals?
Hiring more, expanding my team. That's this year. Getting into more skin and body, so lotion and soap. Been working on that since last. Mm-hmm. Because our fragrances, so many people ask us, oh, are you going to do perfumes? Are you going to do lotion? I want to wear this all over my body. So we're working on it. And then eventually branching into doing some more home decor. when I say some more, we've done the Architectural Digest design show as exhibitors a couple of times. And it is so much fun to be able to recreate a 1920s, 1930s parlor room. And so I've just gotten so much more into design than I ever thought I would be. So yeah, so some design, some really cool prints and fabric and things for throw pillows and lampshades and that sort of stuff.
Awesome. And I can definitely see that because I was on your live. It wasn't the one yesterday, but it was one where you were sitting in the living room and I saw a bunch of like different images on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I could definitely see that for you. Can definitely see that for you.
Thank you. I need more. Now, I need people to see things because I visualize stuff all the time. But if y'all can see it too, then yes. Good.
Now, my last question for you, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
I would tell my 20-year-old self to don't have so many expectations of other people. You know, have more expectations from yourself. Because I think at 20, you know, you expect someone is going to do this. You expect someone is going to act this way. You expect just like, because once you start to have less expectations from people, you have less disappointment in your life. So that's what I would tell my 20-year-old self.
That's great. That's great advice. We can even apply that sometimes to today. So that was great.
Like just you can't have all these expectations of people. And I don't think growing up, no one ever told me that. No one told me that. It's just something that I had to realize that, well, if you don't expect, I expect you to do this. I expect you to do it. No. Why? You have your expectations for who you want to show up as and what you want to do. That's where we need to expect the best from ourselves. And when you expect the best from yourselves, you'll naturally, those things that kind of bothered you before, disappointed you before, they will go away but you also inspire others to expect the best from themselves because they see it in action.
Absolutely. That was deep. I like that. That was amazing. Absolutely great having you on, Terry. I mean, you just enlightened us today. I love the conversation. It was absolutely great.
Oh, thank you so much. This was so much fun. I'm so happy we got a chance to do this. And I love being able to share my story and, you know, to inspire other people with whatever comes out of my mouth. Who knows what it's going to be? But thank you for rolling with it.
Now, question, how do the people find you, Terry?
They can follow us on Instagram and on Facebook at Harlem Candle Company. And if you want to follow me on Instagram and on Facebook and YouTube, it's Travelista Terry, and that's spelled T-E-R-I.
Awesome. And this is Subject Thread Podcast, and we are out, guys. Thank you.